extra.
Sales red meat. That's what it is. Red meat that you can take out into the street 1 minute after you hear it and turn it into money.
In a New York minute?
No, actually, Jenny, in a Jersey minute. And today's Sell or Die Extra is brought to you by...
Jeffrey, what's that in your coffee cup?
What do you think it is, Jen? It's Death Wish coffee. It's the only coffee I drink. Death Wish is the world's strongest coffee, and the world's strongest salesperson needs the world's strongest coffee.
Jeffrey and I drink it, and diehards, you need to be drinking it too. It'll help you wake up and smell the order forms. They have 100% no bullshit money back guarantee, so go get your first bag or first box of K-Cups of the world's strongest coffee at deathwishcoffee.com.
So what does an order form smell like? It's Friday, and that can only mean one thing. It's time for the best of Sell or Die.
The best nuggets of sales wisdom every week, all in one place.
A sales refresher.
I feel refreshed.
I can tell. And if you want to go back and listen to the full episodes, we've made it easy. There are links to each of the episodes right in the show notes.
If you love the podcast, if you're a true seller diehard, and you haven't given us a 5-star review on iTunes yet,
what are you waiting for?
Seriously, Friday is the best day to do it. It helps us so that we can help you.
It's time for the best of the best, the cream of the crop, the creme de la creme, sales grade A red meat. It's time
to sell or die. Jay, you were talking about joining an internet company, not even knowing what the word internet was. And it feels like so often we never feel like technological changes are happening until they're already here. And often salespeople we talk to get caught flat-footed. So what are some of the tech realities that you see that business people right now might be blind to?
Whoa. We'll just go back and talk about video again. So I gave a presentation yesterday to a group of salespeople, and I was recommending technology from ViewDit. It's ViewDit.com that allows you to go to any website, you press a button, and then you record a very short video, and you say, hey, it's Jay. Thanks very much for your interest in having me speak at your event. Can't wait to do it. Click a button, boom, emails them that video. It is incredibly powerful, very human, very warm, costs $0 and 0 cents. And just that ability to very easily take what would be a simple reply email and add personalization, customization, humanity, and video to it is a real advantage for sales folks and marketing folks who want to jump into that pool. So there's lots of little things like that that you can use to increase efficiency, to increase humanity. That for me in that industry in particular is the most interesting.
It's actually customizing, and the people feel like you're talking just to them.
Because you are.
Yeah. For 25 years, I've customized talks. So I get the value of customizing a talk for somebody. But that little video that you send to people in advance blows their doors off.
Yeah, they can't believe it. And it literally takes 20 seconds.
Yeah. The fact that's free is amazing.
Yeah.
So it's called ViewDit.com. Somebody missed that, I'm sure.
Yeah, ViewDit.com. That's correct.
All right. We'll find that.
We'll put that in the show notes.
Yep. So in one of your latest YouTube videos titled How to Delight Your Customers in 2 Inches. Is that true? You say.
Why are you asking Jen?
Because she's delighted. This is what you say. You say the internet has caused customers to become passive aggressive.
Yeah.
How do you see that materializing? And how do people who deal with these customers have to adjust to their business practices? Because a lot of people are just aggressive, and a lot of people are passive.
It's really a challenge. All the new technology has brought with it a lot of new opportunities to interact with one another. So back in the day, not that long ago, right? Just in the era that we've been talking about, if you had a problem with a business, mm-hmm. you could you could bring that up in a very few ways. You could go ask to see a manager face to face. You could call, or maybe depending on the exact date we're thinking about, maybe you could email. You could definitely write a complaint letter. And of course, there's a number of now dusty out of print books on Amazon about how to write a complaint letter, because that was such a common and prevalent thing. Now you can, of course, do all those things. Plus, you can use Yelp or TripAdvisor or Instagram or Twitter or Facebook or any number of other technologies, text message to express your dissatisfaction. Now, because of technology, most people are a lot less interested and comfortable with a face-to-face or interpersonal complaint scenario, because it creates a lot of angst, right? It's just hard.
Yeah, they don't want to be involved in the actual dissemination, but they're more than willing to post about it.
But
or
they
write
can
about
hide
it.
Behind
precisely,
their computer.
Yeah. Precisely. So they lob a Yelp grenade at you, or sort of, you know, say something on Twitter or Facebook. And so I studied that phenomenon a lot in my newest book, Hug Your Haters, about how we have so many more complaints from customers than ever before. Many of those complaints are now in social media, so they're public. But in many cases,
they never go away.
They never go away.
The person that bitches that their French fries are cold.
Yes.
Horrible.
Well, and what's interesting is that a lot of those complaints are the kind of things that ordinarily, because you'd have to go actually talk to somebody, you wouldn't even bother. Like, you wouldn't, right. If your French fries were cold, in many cases, you wouldn't even ask to see a manager. Like, nah, you know, whatever. It's not the greatest French fries I've ever had. Now you're like, well, I can just use my phone and I'll just dial this up on Twitter or Facebook. And so,
and the best is you can do it while you're sitting there.
Yeah.
Of course.
They can read it while you're sitting there. Wouldn't it be classic? You tweet the French fries are cold and the manager comes down and says, I follow you. I saw your tweet. Here's your French fries.
No, for real, that happens though. We advise a lot of companies on just that and say, hey, we have to have a monitoring system and alerting system. And if you can do that, if you can find complaints and then circle back while they're still sitting there, I mean, that blows people's minds. I mean, that's a customer experience that has real value associated with it. So there's a lot more complaints. There's more places to complain. And businesses are not set up for that. They're set up for phone and email. And they mostly are not ready yet to deal with an era and an environment where people are expressing feedback in real time and all these different channels. So it's an interesting place to be right now.
I'd like to take it just one step further. When they get that gripe, speed of response is everything.
It is everything. In fact, it's fascinating. The research that we did for the book found that 40% of the people who complain in social expect a reply within an hour. And very few businesses are set up to reply within an hour. And it's not just social, though. The average amount of time that it takes to reply to an email now, to get an email back from a business, is 44 hours today. That's a long time. That's almost 2 days. That's too long.
Think about how many people that angry person has told in that amount of time.
Oh, yes. Once they start to post, they'll post everywhere.
Yeah, that's it. And then there's another stat that's fascinating that says that speed of response is the most important criteria in telephone customer service satisfaction. So to your point, Jeff, that if somebody, waiting on hold for just a few seconds is more important than friendliness, it's more important than accuracy. Hold time is more important than anything. You're better off lying to your customers fast than telling them the truth slow. I mean, I don't recommend that, but that's mathematically true.
No, but it's funny.
Wow.
You don't have to recommend it.
You should tweet that.
Yeah.
There's some research that says, I didn't do this research, but it's fascinating, that 85% of Americans say that they hate to wait on hold. And every time I hear that, I'm like, well, yeah, of course. And then I always wonder, who are the other 15%, right? Who are like, I don't mind. You know, like, here's the thing. I'm super, super lonely and I love smooth jazz. So yeah, what exactly. I want to do.
I love elevator music.
I want to wait on hold.
Diehards, please help me welcome the great Brad Sugars.
Here are the five disciplines that they got to do.
What are they?
Well, number one is the discipline of strategy. Most business people don't actually have a real strategy. They have they went into business to get a job for themselves in the beginning. And most CEOs of large corporates don't understand the strategy of their business. You know, it's let's just say we're going into the music business. Your strategy could be, I'm a guitarist and I joined a band and I play for a few dollars every night at the local bar. Your strategy could be own the local bar that puts the musicians up. Your strategy could be a label. Your strategy could be, I mean, you could be iTunes. That's a strategy in the music business. Let me just sell everyone's music and take a 30% clip using the stuff that Sony invented, and we'll just do it better than Sony.
I mean, which they're doing, by the way.
Which is not that hard to do. I'm sorry for the CEO at Sony, but you employ a bunch of idiots because you invented the MP3 player, then you let it get away from you, and you own the majority of the music on the planet, and you're paying Apple 30% clip for everything. You're crazy.
Can you clarify something? Should it be – I think CEOs erroneously call it marketing rather than strategy.
Well, see, they think that – see, and business development is another discipline of the five disciplines. But strategy comes back to, what is your methodology of going to market? How do you actually position your product? What way are you selling your product? See, you look at Disney. Disney is a genius at strategy because they have every different methodology of selling the mouse. But then their business development, the sales, the marketing, the customer service is the next discipline where, yeah, you've got to be stronger in all three of those. And it's easy to do sales if your business isn't growing. If you're just trying to replace the one customer you lost, sales is dead easy. If you're trying to do exponential year-on-year growth, sales has to be innovative. It has to be new. It has to be different ways. You have to keep growing your sales and your marketing and your customer service pipeline. Customer service used to be, hey, we have dial-up internet in our hotel. Customer service is now, we have free broadband that you don't even have to put a password into to get it in our hotel. See, it changes year on year, and your customer and a CEO who thought that their customer service 5 years ago was good is going to get beat up today.
Horribly.
Yeah.
Discipline three, people. You don't grow a business, your people do. You know, if you, we said this at the start, you know, if your people can't outperform their training, they can't outperform what they've trained to do. And if you're not recruiting today, I talk to CEOs every day about recruiting, and I just look at them and go, tell me your recruiting strategy. And they look at me and go, well, I got an HR person.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But, you know, what are you doing to be on Glassdoor? How are you building your team? How are you, you know, all of these things about human beings, which goes back to my dad's first lesson to me on business. I was 19 or 20, and I said to him, you know what, Dad, I can't get good people. He looks me dead in the eye because my dad's as blunt. He's almost as blunt as you, Jeffrey, almost. And he says to me, son, you get the people you deserve. You know, you're an average manager running an average business. The highest caliber employee you're ever going to get is average.
Ooh.
When I have a guy tell me there's no good people out there, I tell them there's plenty of good people out there, dude. They're just not working for you.
Yeah, and they don't want to work for you.
Exactly.
Let me tell you why. So, yeah, your people is a massive part, Jen. I think that, you know, and we talk about it just from a sales perspective. I don't care. You hired a sales guy? Yeah, but what are you training him in today? What was his training this morning? Well, we don't do training every day. Well, you're stupid. You know, if you hire a racehorse, how often do you train him? Every day. Okay? You know? Fourth discipline is the discipline of execution, which again, easy to do if you're not a growth business. But if you're growing, your systems that work for 50 customers won't work for 500. Your systems that work for 5,000 customers won't work for 5 million. Your systems that work here in the US will work for maybe one state, but not all states. Your systems that work across here won't work across the world. So your execution has to grow with everything and your planning and all that stuff. And then finally, fifth one is the discipline of mission. How is the human connection made? How do you get it that people love doing business with you, don't just do business with you because you got a cheap price? How do you get your staff to love coming to work and feel like they're part of a mission, not just coming to work for a paycheck? So they're the five disciplines that we explore over 370-odd pages. Buy that dang book.
Motivation Monday.
But here's the thing. You shouldn't rely on someone else to motivate you. So Webster defines motivation as having a strong reason to act or accomplish something, or providing a reason to act in a certain way. And I think that's great and all, but you need to provide that reason to yourself. You need to create your own reason, your own inspiration that'll motivate yourself.
Don't worry about Webster. Worry about waking up in the morning and kicking your own ass. That's the whole deal. Put yourself in a position where you have an ability to go out and make the first call and call all through the day and make the last call at the end of the day. And in the middle, you work your ass off. That's motivation. That's from you love what you do. You know you can help other people. You believe it in your heart. Get out there and do it.
Yeah, you need to create a list of reasons why you're inspired. So think about what inspires you. Is your desire to go out there and just destroy the competition? Is it money? Is it fame? Is it glory? Is it simply needing to just pay the bills? Is it wanting to give your kids a better life than you had, or a better education than you had? Or maybe you just really love your dog and want it to be super spoiled.
Yeah.
But what is it? I want you to think about what your reason or reasons are. And maybe it's just you want to provide for your family, or you simply like nice things. I'm listing a couple of them, but you need to figure out your own reason, your internal why for what you do, what you're doing. Because you got into sales because sales gives you freedom. It gives you liberty. It allows you to connect with people. And maybe it's that you love people, or you love interacting with others or helping others. Sales gives you the ability to earn for your potential, for how hard you're working, for how much effort you're putting in, and for how good you really are. It gives you an unlimited capability of earning. I don't know. I think a lot of salespeople got into sales because of the flexibility in their schedule and knowing that they can work, you know, whenever they want. Really, they can work a million hours at night. You know, they can, their boss isn't tracking them all day. But, and there's so many reasons, but you got to figure out your why. Why do you want to bring home the bacon? What's it going to do for you and maybe even your family? And keep that top of mind all the time. And in fact, you should keep it somewhere where you can see it all the time.
Like put it on a note in front of your bathroom mirror like I do?
Well, that's a Jeffrey Gitomerism.
Okay.
Like it.
Here's
the deal. Or you can put it on the, how many times a day do you think people look at their phone?
Under a million or over a million? What's the over under on that?
Well, I would just put it on the screensaver of my phone.
I see. Okay, cool.
Okay, make an image with your reason why.
So let me throw this at you. There are a lot of people who have big plans. For example, remember New Year's Eve when you made those big plans? How much time did you spend New Year's Eve planning versus New Year planning? I'm betting they're at least equal. And then there's the weekend. People by hump day, which whatever day that is, I think it's Wednesday. And a great Geico commercial, by the way, for the
Wednesday
camel.
Yeah.
Okay, so hump day comes, and you're all of a sudden, you're, what am I going to do this weekend? I got to go out and party. I got to go out and do all kind of crap. Dude, quit that crap. You're not going to motivate yourself by working for the weekend. A 1980s song by Loverboy, which I will be playing at Outbound. Everybody's working for the weekend. That song is deathly incorrect. In fact, it sends a great message to mediocre people. If you're working for the weekend, you're working for the wrong reasons. You can't wait to get your paycheck and then squander it on something stupid. Come on. So I'm looking at it from this perspective. I think if you work for a greater goal, I think if you work for something that you love and something that you're passionate about, the pictures are all over your office. The goals are all up in your bathroom mirror. It has nothing to do with going out and drinking a bunch of craft beer on the weekend for $8 a throw and then buying the cans to take them home so you can keep your drunk up all weekend. This is about going out and doing something for you, most important person in the world, aspirational things that will make you better. And it's been my experience that I'm not doing this for money. I'm doing this to be best. If I'm the best, money shows up. Ask any athlete.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Your working on the weekend thing reminded me of the Dolly Parton song.
Oh, the nine to five.
Working 9 to 5.
Jen, that don't song. Sing. Okay, great.
Come on, everyone loves when I sing.
I know, yeah. Yeah, it's a motivator.
It for me.
Name five people that...
you know.
All right. So I think that there's another aspect of this, and some of you diehards get in a slump from time to time. Mm-hmm. What do you do then?
Well, the first thing you should do is read my 27 winning strategies to get out of a sales slump. We'll definitely link that in the show notes. But, I mean, think about Tiger Woods. He was in a slump
for 15 years
for
about.
A while.
Yeah.
And he had to do something to get himself out of it in order to be best again. Right?
And you know what he did? He played every day.
Mm.
I mean,
yes. So he continued to practice, but he also talked to himself and got out of his own head and got out of his own way and changed his mindset.
So if you have goals and you think they're unreachable, then take them one bite at a time. If you have things that are disturbing to you, that are hurting your ego, that are giving you a sense of, I don't believe in this anymore, dude, go home at night and don't drink a beer. Go home at night and make a plan.
Well, if you're in sales, dude, you need to be okay with hearing the word no and being okay with it.
Yeah.
Think about, okay, think about this. You're the person who achieved their quota. You exceeded your quota. Okay. How do you feel? What are your beliefs? Who have you become because of that? But let's say you have $1 million quota right now and you're terrified of it.
Yeah. And your sales are now $25,000.
Oh, shit. Okay. So you're not even close. How would you feel as that person if you made quota? How would you feel if you reached that $1 million mark in spite of the fact that you're currently in quarter two only at $25,000? I want you to think about who that person is that you need to become, that you would become if you reached your quota, because you need to begin to embody those feelings right now. You need to work from that place of positivity, that growth mindset. You need to become the person mentally before you can actually physically make those achievements. And I don't know if this sounds too existential, but if you're acting from a place of fear, like, oh, well, I'm never going to make that quota. That quota is totally out of my reach. Well, guess what? You're never going to freaking make that quota. But you know, someone said to us recently, Jeffrey, my quota's just not obtainable.
By who?
Well, here's the thing. Like, if you're saying that, and this is what we said to them, like, if you're saying that, you're right. You're never going to make your quota because what you're saying is what you believe, and you have to believe that you're going to be able to do it, and that then you can think about, okay, I can do this. I will do this. Now let's talk about what are the actions I can take to make that. And then that's where the inspiration comes in.
This has been a Sell or Die Extra. If you like it and you like the show and you like all the information that's inside of it, go to the GittimerLearningAcademy.com and subscribe. What are you doing? What's this noise?
I'm going to GittimerLearningAcademy.com to subscribe.
Way to go. Way to go. You can also subscribe to Sell or Die on Overcast if you have an iPhone, or if you don't, go to the store and get an iPhone, or if you don't, go to iTunes or Stitcher and come back every single Tuesday for a full Sell or Die episode with expert sales analysis that will help you do the one thing you're hoping for, make more sales.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit SellorDieNetwork.com.